Do you ever have a skill that you've spent a long time learning that then you suddenly read something that completely changes your view of like a fundamental core assumption you made like 10 years ago?
Well, for the sake of argument, let's say yes. This sounds like that you've had a recent experience.
Yeah, so I had a Dunning-Kruger moment when I was making coffee a few weeks ago. And I went to look something up and I went to the coffee subreddit, which is actually a surprisingly robust community full of people who are both good at making coffee and relatively inclusive for the most part.
Is this, just to be clear, is this literally r/coffee?
It's r/coffee, I think. I don't. It's funny. My subreddits that I follow are kind of ossified at this point. Like I occasionally will add a new game that I'm really into, like Elden Ring made the cut. Mm-hmm. Steam Deck, r/Steam Deck recently made the cut.
Okay. I think it's safe to assume that coffee is the coffee subreddit. It's not like Brewmeister 5000 or something.
Well, you say that, but sometimes it is some weird offshoot, but I believe it is r/coffee. I can look and add a link after in the show notes later. But, so they were talking about pour technique, and I've spent more than 1,000 hours over the last 12, 13 years doing pour overs, right? It's the thing I do every day, sometimes twice. And I feel like I'm pretty good at it. There was a post about pouring and letting the water drain all the way out before you pour more, or pouring more on top of the water that's already in there so the beds never get dry, the bed never gets dry. And somebody said, yeah, you let it drain all the way out so that it doesn't channel water through the same path every single time. That's the reason you let it dry and you pour. And I was like, oh, that makes perfect sense, because you want to get even distribution through all the grounds, not just have the water go by what the same subset of grounds the entire time, because that's the easy path.
Yes, you want equal opportunity ground wetting.
Well, I was assuming that you want to keep the grounds in suspension the whole time, so they're kind of a little bit floating and turbulent, which is, it turns out, not at all the right way to do this. Uh-huh. And my coffee game has gotten so much stronger in the last 3 weeks since I learned this. So
this feels like a chaos problem for Ian Malcolm. This is like right up there with putting the water droplet on Laura Dern's hand.
Oh, like, slight imperfections in the skin, Brad.
Yes, slight imperfections in your coffee grounds. I have to say that when you said pour technique, it took me a good second to realize you meant P-O-U-R and not P-O-O-R.
Or P-O-R-E.
You're
slight imperfections poor, in the skin, Brad.
You have poor technique.
Welcome to Brad and Will Made a Tech Pod. I'm Will.
I'm Brad.
Yeah, I think we should think about changing the name now, finally. Yeah. I feel like I have some ideas. I don't know if I want to put them out there yet, but
what's bringing this on at episode 141?
You know, there's never, you can't get too attached to things, is all I'm saying. You know, whether it's your poor technique or the name of your podcast or whatever it happens to be. It's the end of the month, Brad.
It is.
I don't know how that happened already.
The last like three of these that we've done, we've stopped and said, like, is it really time for another Q&A? Like, can we get away with that? Do we need to do one more week first?
It seems like it was just a day ago that it was the solstice. And now here we are at the end of the month, looking down the barrel of another July.
Oh, it was so hot on the solstice. It was easily the hottest day of the year out here. It was in the 90s in the city. I don't know about for you.
Look, I know people mock us for being complainers about Bay Area weather, but I have air conditioning now, kind of, but it's only in one or two rooms. The houses here are not built for climate extremes. They're built for a temperate coastal, and 90 degrees, real hot here, it turns out.
I say it every time. Not only no AC, like, we don't even have ceiling fans in this apartment. It's just like whatever crappy desk fans we can buy is all we've got. It's bad. And hey, weird, extreme weather is becoming a little more common than it was.
Yeah, it's a weird coincidence, huh? No. I don't know. Must be something in the air.
Anyway, Carl the Fog has fully exerted his presence at this point.
I don't think Carl tweets anymore.
No?
I haven't seen a Carl tweet in a really long time. Maybe I unfollowed Carl the Fog and didn't realize it.
Because he's too busy shitting up my sunny mornings.
Maybe Carl the Fog blocked me. I didn't even think about that. That's grim.
Blocked by weather.
Yeah. Wow.
That's a low. That is a serious low in your internet career.
I know that politicians aren't allowed to block you from official accounts, but is weather allowed to block you?
Hey, weather, as part of the cold, uncaring universe, I think can do whatever it wants.
I am not. The good news, folks, is that I am not blocked by Carl the Fog, but I did apparently at some point stop following Carl the Fog.
Hmm.
I think Carl the Fog maybe got political at some point.
Ah.
And okay. I was like, I don't need this for my fog related accounts, just, Twitter accounts.
Just be weather, please.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Okay. All right. We have questions.
Yeah. If people have questions.
Yeah, you're right. They have questions. We maybe have answers.
If people have questions, how do they get them? Is there some way that they can get them to us?
If you're on the Discord, you can go to the Questions Seeking Answers channel and drop them in there.
Okay.
Also, there's an email account. Did you check the email account?
I have one right here ready to go, as is our tradition.
As our now customary one email question. What do you got?
I absolutely did not just open the emails 2 seconds ago and find the two questions and pick one of the two that are there. Colin says, peanut butter and honey on a pancake, yes or no?
Oh, wow. I never even thought. Wow. So I am
that's
a fan.
Next level, I'm going to say.
Yes, I am a fan of the peanut butter and honey sandwich.
I like peanut butter and honey on an English muffin, just open-faced, toasted. It's real good.
I don't know if I've ever done peanut butter on pancakes, period. I guess I've done peanut butter on waffles, though.
I've never done peanut butter on any, like, I've never done peanut butter on pancakes or waffles. That's madness, but I'm going to try it. There's a place in town called Zazie that we used to go to for brunch that does a gingerbread pancake that they put lemon curd on.
Wow.
I'm going to go and tell you. It's the business. It's really, really good. It's worth waiting in line for. It's that good.
That sounds really... Sorry, you said it was gingerbread?
Gingerbread pancake with lemon curd spread. You have to ask for the lemon curd. Usually they give you maple syrup and butter. But if you ask for the lemon curd, you just smear it on the top.
Smear.
And it is delish.
My mom just made... I'd never had lemon curd until like 3 months ago.
Oh, wow.
She made some in the Instant Pot.
Oh, I didn't know you could do that.
And wow, lemon curd's pretty good.
We do... lemon curd was a staple in my house because of, I think, my mother and grandmother's English lineage and history.
Do you observe the rule that you're not supposed to use metal utensils with it because it can pick up a slightly metallic taste?
If commercially processed stuff doesn't have that problem, generally, if you make it at home, you have to do that.
Yeah. Yes. It was a lot of plastic spoons.
Yeah. It is difficult to find lemon curd that I don't like, it turns out.
Yeah,
I like, I see that. I like all lemon. I like lemon creams. I like lemon curd. We got lemon jelly at the garden sale in Pacifica a few weeks ago. I haven't tried that yet, but I'm interested.
Lemon jelly. Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that was possible. Lemon meringue pie.
I had key lime pie for Father's Day this year.
Yeah.
Which was delish. Kind of the same.
Those are two sides of the same coin. Lemon meringue and key lime are just...
It turns out I'm not as big a fan of meringue as you maybe would think.
I'm kind of with you, actually. I feel like the meringue is a thing to be tolerated to get to the good stuff.
I like the whipped cream on the key lime better than the meringue on the lemon meringue.
I would, you know what? I would take a lemon whipped cream pie.
I would get it. Actually. Absolutely. Lemon topped whipped cream pie.
Oh. Anyway, what was it? Pancakes with peanut butter?
I'm going to try that.
That sounds great.
I might even take the peanut butter on a pancake and put it up one half and then fold it up like a taco.
Oh, wow. Oh, man. But it's going to be
a hand pancake.
Right. But that's going to be warm peanut butter and warm honey just coming out both ends. It's going to you might as well go eat that in the bathtub.
So if you have questions, you can send them to techpod at content.town.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's techpod. At content.town. Brad, what's the other way for people to send in questions?
We've got all these Discord questions here, as mentioned. I was going to say real fast, it just occurred to me that now that people know that emailing a question is an almost guaranteed way, you've got like a 50-50 shot of getting your question on the show if you email it. We may have to start checking the inbox more often.
Yeah, most of our emails these days are from people. Here's one. It says, no hard feelings. Since I haven't heard back, I assume you don't want to work with us at blank blank media. That's okay. No hard feelings. If you change your mind at some point, will you give us a call?
Wow.
I know.
That's like a guilt trip.
Look, it's the hard sell.
You get some like prospective ad partners, people in marketing, stuff like that, who are trying to draft on your podcast, who are fairly persistent, but I've never seen one that straight up like lays a passive aggressive guilt trip on you for not responding.
We have more. Here's an email from Timothy about Crank, the unofficial game of the movie.
Oh,
he says, as a short time listener of the pod who finally listened to the Iron Backlog, I'm both sad and excited to have listened to the most current episode. It took me like 3 months between this pod, Next Lander, and Giant Bomb pod to finally catch up. Had a few ideas on the Crank game for the playdate you two will be cooking up for us. What if the Idle Battery Trilogy game had a Crank skin slash unlock mechanism in it from the movies? He must get charged up multiple times in somewhat escalating ways in order to stay alive. And then he has a bunch of other ideas about that. This is pretty. Yeah, we had more than two emails is what I'm saying.
Okay.
Yeah, I need to make a point to go through the emails more regularly, because now that we've started mentioning them every month, people are sending them in again, which, yeah. Anyway,
it's nice to feel wanted.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Shall we get into these Discord questions? The answer is yes. I didn't have to ask you that.
Questions.
I should just start reading a question.
Questions.
Here's a question from Gage 006. They may think of it as Gage 006, but I like the.
I assume it's 00.
I like the 00 construction. Okay.
Alex Trevenian was 006 in GoldenEye.
Is that I was just about to say, I don't know why that I know that that's a GoldenEye character, because I've never seen a James Bond movie start to finish.
Yeah, but you played GoldenEye, the canonical first console shooter that was worth a damn.
I guess I kind of played it. Okay.
Coming soon to the Xbox, I assume.
Here's Gage 006 question. I thought that was going to happen at their showcase, and yeah, just crickets, even though the achievements are out there. I don't know what's going on.
I think if you show off a 25-year-old game that turns out isn't that good when you replay it, maybe by today's standards.
Oh, come on. People love that game. They don't care how good it isn't.
Fair. Okay.
They just want gold. They want their GoldenEye. Also, Xbox didn't, you know, they don't have a lot of else. They don't have a lot else going on.
So. I want to bitch about you choosing Odd Job and having an advantage because the hitbox was smaller.
Mm. What were they thinking? Okay. All right. Gage 006. I miss the phone OS wars. RIP Palm and WebOS, the best OS. It seemed like new technology or ideas were coming out all the time. But then since Google and Apple took over, it's become very boring and incremental. Do you think we'll see a return to real competition in the phone space at some time?
I think you have a correlation between two different things that happened around the same time. One is that the OS space consolidated, and the other is that phones got boring because we reached a base level of functionality on the hardware side, actually. So I don't know that phones are going to be, I think phones went from, hey, everything is new and exciting and fresh, to incremental upgrade cycle in like 5 years, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
From like 2007 to 20, like by the time the iPhone 5 came out, it was basically done.
Yeah. I don't know why, for some reason in my mind, what was the first iOS with the flat design aesthetic? Was it 7? I think that was iOS 7, right? Where all the icons went flat.
Yeah, it was 6 or 7, I think.
Like, that is around the time to me that phones kind of plateaued in terms of being interesting and just became like a thing that you use.
Well, yeah. The core feature set became not ossified, because it still is changing, but like if you think about back to early iPhone, we didn't have notifications. Like, there was no way to go back and see old notifications.
Right.
Right. You couldn't say, oh, I want notifications from this app, but not this app, unless the apps actually offered that as a feature. So you didn't have a way to add stuff with your voice. You didn't have a way to search the entire OS. You didn't have a way to share things between apps. Like, remember, like it's hard to remember the iterative process over those first like 8 or 10 years of phone development got us to a really interesting place. Like, shockingly, it took 30 years for that to happen in PCs. So I don't know. I kind of miss WebOS has a pretty good install base these days on LG TVs, it turns out, because mm-hmm. that's what their backend is based on. But yeah, I miss the more everything is crazy. Like, what's the crazy new thing that Steve Jobs is going to stand on the stage and introduce this year was always a highlight day of the year.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, a couple things happened.
On the Apple side, I have to give them some credit recently in the last couple iOS versions, but also this is such an incredibly low bar that it's actually maybe kind of sad that I am giving them credit for this, but they've been making some moves, and I always apologize for being so Apple-centric. That's just what we use here. But
yeah.
They've been adding stuff that should have been there from day one, like letting you actually set defaults for things like browser, finally.
Mm-hmm.
Like 16 that's coming up, like they're actually letting you edit kind of everything about the home screen, which is something I like. They've moved away a little bit from the, like, we know the one right way for you to do things and you're going to do it, to actually giving you some customization, which has been really nice.
Well, and the things that are, yeah, the interesting thing is people who make apps are now a little gun shy about supporting stuff. Like the widgets are a good example. The widgets in the control center and in the slide out tray, the uptick on those has been really low, despite them being very useful. Outside of like the people who make app only iOS and Mac only apps. So I'm interested to see. I think they're waiting to see if people stick with that stuff before they push on. But anyway, I don't know. I think real competition in the phone space is probably done at this point.
That's sad. Like the one thing I wanted to bring up here is like RISC-V becoming more of a thing. Like maybe we'll start seeing, because that's an open architecture for SoCs. But like when you think about, like in my mind, in my like digital hippie kind of like everything should be open kind of conception, it would be cool if there was like a common hardware spec and like a, I guess I would say like a Linux for phones. I mean, that's what Android was supposed to be originally, right? Until it became a little more proprietary, but like a truly open, fully open phone OS. But like when I think about like all the manufacturing chain to actually build a phone top to bottom, like anybody making an investment like that to make a usable device probably is going to want to close everything off and control every aspect of the business they can.
Well, and also there's nothing saying you can't build a closed OS on top of an open CPU SoC.
Sure. Right.
Right. Like I don't know. I don't know that I'm going to sacrifice. I think the other way to look at this is that, rather than saying, hey, it's been ossified, it's that, hey, no matter what phone you get a minimum level of functionality that's really, really high and coherent at this point.
Yeah.
So like it's kind of like the places that weird innovation has been happening, that fast innovation has been happening, are around the edges and things like the I can't remember the name of the company that makes the phone off the top of my head, but the people that are doing the modular phones where you can, is it Element?
The Fairphone? There's a couple. Yeah. The Fairphone and Element, maybe two different groups. I'm not sure.
But yeah, like there's like that kind of stuff where you can buy modules that you plug in and you can assemble the phone with exactly the stuff you want in it, is where that kind of like bleeding edge stuff is happening now. And it's much smaller markets, so you don't hear about it as much.
Yeah, you're right. The Fairphone is exactly what I had in mind when I was talking about like a kind of truly open phone platform. But okay, how about the question from Branables? Since you folks use a Discord a lot for your job, since you folks use Discord a lot for your, the idea that we're each on a single Discord.
Boy.
Since you folks use Discord a lot for your job, how do you stay on top of busy Discords? If a Discord is moving too fast or has too many messages since I last looked, I get overwhelmed. Then I can't figure out where to start. This usually causes me to give up and likely stop using that Discord server. I think I don't feel like I can invest the time into reading the backlog of messages. It's kind of the same reason comic books overwhelm me now. Too many books and I don't know where or how to start. I treat Discord as, for the most part, as very ephemeral. Like, yeah, yeah, yeah. There are like, there's kind of like a couple of channels at any given time on our Discord, for example, that I do scroll back and try to read most everything, like the Mr./Emulation one, because I like keeping up with news on that scene. Like networking and Linux, because that's just kind of what I've been into lately. Mm-hmm. Like those I will try to like scroll back, but like for the most part, just sort of dip in and see what's going on and maybe throw a message in if you want to chat, or even if you don't, like don't try to read everything. Like that way lies madness.
It's like at some point, like 10 years ago, I realized I was following more than 500 people on Twitter. And at that point, Twitter went from being a thing that I read everything that everybody that I followed posted to what was on the screen when I had the thing open.
Mm-hmm.
And Discord's kind of the same way. It shouldn't be there are a handful of Discords I'm in where I'm in there with like a dozen people at most. And those are those, it's funny. My wife and I were talking about this the other day, cause she has a bazillion text threads with all of her friends going where they're talking in groups with each other. And like some days those go off like crazy. And some days there's no messages. And I was like, I don't have a bunch of text threads with my friends. And she's like, you have a bazillion Discords that you're in, yeah, with like groups of people that you know from the internet and groups of people that you know from Twitch and groups of people that you know from work and old jobs and stuff like that. So the ones that are the old jobs and the group that that's the four of us that play PUBG every night for 5 years. Like, I read all the messages in there, but I don't read all the messages in the TechPod forum. And you have to rely on at replies to continue conversations that you start with people, but it kind of works. That's the weird thing is, like, I was talking to Cake Batter the other day and, had a conversation that spanned a couple of days. I think it was Cake Batter. It might've been somebody else, but anyway, we were able to continue it because of the replies. So of course we complicated that by asking people not to at message us, which
sure,
you know, anyway.
I do wonder if, like, I mean, I don't know how much time you spent on IRC, but, like, I wonder if those of us who did a lot of things like IRC back in the day have had an easier time adapting back to Discord because, like, I've already kind of got that chat mentality.
For me, it was Twitter. Like, in the 90s, there was so little stuff on the internet that, like, I read every Slashdot post and every Shaq News post and every Blues News post. And, like, you could keep up with everything at that point, right? For me, when I got into Twitter, I realized that you absolutely couldn't do that for everything that was on Twitter or you would go crazy really quickly. So, it's about dipping in and not being a completionist.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Question from Narfinger. What was the technology thing you mispronounced for the longest?
This is a trap question.
Is it? I've got an easy answer, which is Asus. I still defiantly kind of
Asus.
I oscillate between Asus and Asus even now. I know it's wrong, but
the thing I always heard about that, I don't know if this is true or not, but the thing I always heard is that Asus was pronounced Asus until Acer spun off.
Oh, really?
And then they changed the official pronunciation so it didn't sound the same.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. That makes me feel way better.
Yeah.
I don't know what that name means. I don't know where it came from, but.
I think it's just your normal. It's like LG being short for Lucky Gold Star. It's just some letters that go well together and make a pleasing sound.
I see.
I don't know. I was reading ahead and found a question that's really funny later. Oh,
wait,
on.
I'm sorry. Can I jump back in before we move on?
Yeah.
I just looked at the Asus web or Wikipedia. According to the company website, the name Asus originates from Pegasus.
Oh, that makes sense.
Although I could definitely see that being some kind of like lore that they filled in retroactively.
Yeah, that seems like a classic tech retcon.
Yes.
Because remember, LG doesn't stand for Lucky Gold Star, the name of the original company. It stands for Life's Good. No.
Well, that's what their marketing would have you believe. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. What's the term for that? A retronym?
Mm-hmm.
Or something along those lines.
I think retronym is technically
when you
have a name for something and then you build a acronym that makes the name work.
Yeah, retronym is something I think you name retroactively, right? Like, it didn't have a name. This is different. Or this is the opposite. No.
I thought a retronym was like if you name your thing Stars, like your spaceship Stars, and then you have to come back in and come up with the acronym that makes it.
It doesn't have to be an acronym. It can just be any term.
Oh, there you go.
Do you have a mispronunciation or would you like to just move on?
I think everybody probably knows if they've been listening for a while, they're familiar with mine.
Oh, right. Okay. It took me a second to remember what you were talking about.
I had somebody who I used to work with at Maximum PC who was like, who was sent that clip when they pronounced executable that way.
Uh-huh.
And he was like, first off, he was like, wait, that's Will, isn't it? He's like, but that's how I say executable. And then he was like, so he started to argue. He's like, look, this is how I say it. This is how we said it at Maximum PC. And then they were like, hey, the person that you learned how to say this from at Maximum PC is the one in this clip. And there was a whole, anyway, it was an awkward conversation.
I mean, I heard you just now. You had to take it pretty slow when you said execute.
It's an approved pronunciation according to several dictionaries.
Is it really?
Most of the editable ones. Ooh, yeah.
You're just going to no appeal reason. To authority, huh?
Yeah. I am absolutely going to appeal to authority. Look, if we can't agree on dictionaries, what can we agree on?
I am generally with you. I am going to reveal a deep, dark secret here.
Yes.
Back in the 90s, when I was first really getting my head around computers in DOS and so forth.
Yeah.
When I saw .exe on a file, I generally pronounced it exec in my head.
Yeah, right.
So I'm kind of
you're halfway there.
I almost went down your dark path, and then somehow I managed to pull myself back from the brink.
I got it. I'm reasonably sure I got it from my grandmother, who
she would know, I guess, because she was there before any of us.
She was punching cards in the 60s. Yeah,
yes, actually, maybe that. I guess there is some authority there. Okay, how about this question from Oscar? What are your opinions in regards the Fermi paradox? Personally, I think people vastly overestimate the probability of intelligent life. I think it's just us out here, at least in the Milky Way.
Man, that's grim.
Fermi paradox, for people who don't know, is the kind of apparent contradiction between what looks like the amount of evidence or probability for there being life in the universe and our lack of observation of it. Does that make sense? Did I explain that properly?
It's the contrast between the lack of clear, obvious evidence for extraterrestrial life and the various high estimates for the existence of extraterrestrial life.
Like you look at the number of planets, like the kind of chemical composition of the universe and the theories for how life came about, and like the sheer scale of the universe, and you think like we should have seen something by now, right? But that's the idea.
Well, I mean, arguably though, it's funny, depending on how existentially crisis I'm feeling on the day to day, my answer to this probably changes. Like you think about the scale of human civilization at which we would be able to detect another alien civilization, which has been, you know, a few hundred years, maybe 1,000 years on the outside.
Yeah, if that. I would say.
Yeah, maybe depending on whether you're talking about radio or light or whatever. I mean, the scale.
Even optically, it's only a few hundred years, right?
Yeah. I mean, and it depends on the scale of the thing too. I don't know that we're in a position to have real insight into this problem yet. Because like we're not gonna see, you know, the question is, do the other civilizations all wipe themselves out when they reach a certain technological level? Are they not reaching technological levels because they're like weird hive minds and they don't give a shit about reaching out into the world? And they just grow inward forever. Like there's a bazillion different ways this could go. I think that there's absolutely other life in the universe. I don't know whether it's intelligent. I think probably I would like to think that there is. I'd like to think that we're not in a dark forest.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at, is that it seems basically impossible that some kind of life doesn't exist elsewhere. I mean, like the observable universe keeps getting bigger. Like, do you remember when, gosh, what was it? Like I think the estimate of the number of galaxies was like 100 billion at one point, and then it ballooned to like 2 trillion in the course of a few years. Like they keep coming up with better observational methods and realizing there is more and more out there.
Well, yeah, it's the Hubble. It's the thing that happened when they shined the Hubble. They pointed the Hubble at a dark spot of sky for 3 months or something a long time ago to the deep field survey. And instead of seeing nothing there, they just saw a bazillion galaxies. Now, the problem with those distant galaxies is that they're so far away that like we're seeing, you know, back in time 20 billion years or something ridiculous because of the way the expansion of the universe works. And anyway, it's
13.
Yeah, sorry, it was a lot. I knew. So I don't know. I hope that there's other stuff. I hope there's other people out there. I mean, there's more audience for the podcast, right?
I guess that's the case. I tend to think, given the scale, the sheer physical scale of the universe and the time scales that we're talking about, that the likelihood of, if there even is other intelligent life, the likelihood of two civilizations being in the same place at the same time, especially given, you know, limits on, you know, the speed of light and stuff like that, are essentially nil. Like what are the chances that two civilizations would evolve roughly in parallel, close enough together that they actually are ever going to encounter any evidence of each other? Like practically nothing.
If you want the ultimate grim take on this, you should read the Three Body Problem books, because Cixin Liu approaches this problem with a shocking grim fortitude that's very good and very fun to read.
That book is perpetually checked out at the library, but I need to get on the list. I've wanted to read that for a while.
You should get on the list for that book. It is exceptional.
Yeah. There's also the other possibility to consider is that we are the first, that there will be. I mean, we are very early in the predicted lifespan of our universe.
The math on that's pretty rough, though. because we're very early, but our timeline is 50,000 years for civilization and for, you know, 2 billion for life. So in a 17 billion year old universe, presumably something else should have happened.
13.8.
Oh, they changed the date again. Okay, my bad.
So it's been 13 for a while, but.
Well, no, but so the point is, with the expansion of the universe, we can see further back than we can see. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it, you know, it's we're there. The predicted lifespan of the universe is like hundreds of billions to trillions of years, and we're only 13 in. So the point is, like, there could be plenty of thriving, interacting, intelligent civilizations 50 billion years from now, but we'll be long gone.
You don't want to be around for the back half of the universe. It's going to be a real bummer, man. All the brown dwarfs everywhere.
Stars winking out.
Right. I mean, look, I played Outer Wilds. You don't want to be there for that.
Yeah.
The thing I will. Yeah. I don't know. I thought I had something pithy, but this is too grim a topic.
Yeah. I think you're right. Well, here, let's ground this podcast a little bit now with a question from Cake Batter.
Oh,
just how big does a hole in a sock need to be before you consider throwing it out?
The maximum darning size for me is about a dime.
Darning?
It's when you mend a sock.
Oh, wait, specifically a sock? It can't be like you can't darn a shirt.
You can darn knit things, I think. So I find if you do something that's much bigger than a dime, then it doesn't, like, the sock doesn't feel right at that point.
I see. I would say any hole is too big a hole in a sock. Like, if it's threadbare, fine. As soon as there is flesh exposed, that sock has got to go.
I have a couple of big woolly socks, like my winter hiking socks that are really thick, that are essentially just slippers at this point that I'll keep. But I also only wear them when I'm wearing like slippers around the house at this point.
Oh, yeah, those are fine. Like, if that's got a hole, whatever. But
yeah,
if you're out putting any stress on your feet, take care of your socks.
I switched
and your feet.
I switched to no-show socks recently from like ankle height socks.
I just did too, and it was out of repeated shaming.
Yeah, I got somebody was like, one of the other parents at school pickup one day was like, "Hey, nice socks, bro."
Oh no!
Yeah,
somebody from outside.
So,
wow,
I didn't want to be stinky.
I can't believe the audacity of something like your wife. Sure. Like somebody you live with, I get it. Like it's probably okay for them to mock your socks.
I mean, we're friends. We hang out. It's like, I felt like the social encounter there was entirely appropriate.
Okay.
But I also would never notice another person's socks, I don't guess. So
I got enough grief at home. It's not like I was wearing like knee high socks or something, but they
would have been okay,
like,
probably
up around the ankle, like athletic socks, and they were white. That was the other problem.
Yeah,
is the white socks when they're more than they don't fly. So I too have been recently shamed into buying some black no shows.
I was a big fan of the get a giant bag of socks from Target or Costco, the ankle high ones. Mm-hmm. The no shows are more expensive. They're less comfortable in every way. Mm-hmm. When I'm walking, often they annoy me by sliding down. But I look cool. So I guess mission accomplished.
The things we do for social approval.
Yeah.
The sacrifices.
Yeah.
Question from a kosher bacon jam.
Mm-hmm.
What's the longest either of you, feel comfortable being disconnected from the internet? I'm on a small road trip. I've gone multiple days without internet while traveling. When you're off grid for 5 days and then it starts to trickle in and your phone goes bananas updating notifications, it's kind of like a good drug effect feeling.
Okay. So first off, KBJ is on a long, has driven like 4,000 miles, has gone from the West Coast to the East Coast up to the Yukon and is like on a, I would describe it as a fairly epic road trip at this point.
That's serious. Yeah.
Has had vehicle difficulties and like it's a good road trip. I would say, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes probably for me.
Wow. That's grim. Dark.
So when we did a little bit of traveling, went to places where internet was sparse this year and that was fine. Like I was gone, we were gone for a week with kind of bad internet and I was excited about that actually. So
I feel like the actual thought experiment here is to add the qualifier that your job no longer depends on the internet. Like let's say that professionally you have no use for the internet anymore. Like that time gets dramatically longer for me in that case.
Yeah. But even like when I'm camping, it's not like when I got back to got back to civilization. I was like, I suddenly had the Jones. I feel like when the fires happened and we lost power for 5 days a few years ago, that was maybe the indicator. But also at that point, I really wanted to know the internet to know where the fires were around me. So maybe that's a different, there might be an asterisk on that one.
Sure.
I don't know. I feel like I'm probably fine at this point. I'm much less engaged with the internet on the moment to moment now than I was, say, 10 years ago.
Yeah, for sure. I think the older I get, I think the less internet I want in my life. But we have lashed ourselves to this horrible beast. So here we are. Question from Ryan Sargent. Brad, what's the status of the sardine horde?
Well, Brad, what's the status of the sardine horde?
They're so spread out around the house that I can't tell you. Like, there were so damn many of them that they... Mm-hmm. Have you ever bought so much of a thing that you just have to shove it in every available cranny and nook?
I mean, this is one of the things that when I talk to my sister in Tennessee, where she has like a big basement where she stores, like, she goes to Sam's or Costco, whatever, and hoards, buys, she's like, I just buy paper towels twice a year, right? I'm good. I'm like, I don't have a place to store. If I bought toilet paper to last me a year, it would take up a significant portion of my storage space. Can you guys just open a drawer and pop out some sardines anytime you want? Is that the kind of situation you're in?
Basically, yes. They came in like shrink wrapped packs of six.
Yeah.
So there are a bunch of little six high stacks of cans all over the place. Like, they're in cupboards, they're in drawers, they're under shelves. I would guess we bought 66 of them. That was February, I want to say. Well, I would guess we're maybe halfway through them now.
What I love about this is that your experience here is basically creating a Bethesda environmental storytelling scene in an RPG. It's like, yes. Here's an apartment building. Let's see if there's any good loot in this place. And you come through and it's like, this one just has a bunch of old socks with holes in it. Holy shit. These are the sardine people.
Whoever is scavenging for food in the future post San Francisco wasteland is going to be very excited when they get to our house. I went really hard on sardines for the first like month or two.
Yeah.
Because it was such a luxury of like, oh man, we usually try to ration these. I'm gonna have one every night.
But, yeah.
At this point, I'd say we're down to like a couple of month probably. I was eating them as like kind of hors d'oeuvres, like on crackers with horseradish or hot sauce.
What kind of cracker you use for that?
Usually a Triscuit is my default.
Okay. I like a Triscuit.
Most situations where a cracker is required, it's a Triscuit.
I like those water crackers, the fancy ones you put like soft cheese on.
Yes, my partner is a big fan of that. You can get like nice variety packs of those.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, I ate a bunch of hors d'oeuvres of the sardines for the first few weeks, and then we started trying to cook with them a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody on the Discord linked it, or no, maybe it was on Twitter. Somebody linked a really nice blog for cooking with tinned fish.
Ooh.
So we tried a couple of recipes with sardines, which were kind of nice. But at this point, they're just kind of a fact of life. They're just, the novelty wore off. They're just there and we eat one every so often.
There was a period of time where like if a Italian recipe when I was making sauce needed oil, I would just use a little anchovy tin oil with a couple of anchovies in there. Because the anchovies, when you cook them, just kind of dissolve in the oil.
Oh, interesting.
And they make it taste real good.
Wow.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty good.
I got to say, this is apropos of absolutely nothing, but I've been working on Detroit style pizza lately at home.
Oh,
Like the big square pieces with the kind of fried crust. It's like, if you think about like your chain pizza, it's like a Pizza Hut Supreme on the bottom where it's like that fried crusty focaccia, like crust almost.
Okay. I've never had it. And I was wondering, cause I've seen pictures and I was wondering what separated it from deep dish. The other thing I'll say is that it reminds me of Little Caesars, like the big classic rectangular pizza.
So it is like the Little Caesars in shape, but the crust is completely different. So the upshot is you get a really crunchy crust and the cheese goes edge to edge and it kind of melts down the side a little bit. So it's all like gooey and like it's real good.
That looks real good.
It's also pretty easy to make, at home. I've been doing the Serious Eats recipe, but I'm still working on getting the crust as crisp as I want. So if people have crust crispening tips, I would love to hear them.
Crust crispening, crispy crust. Okay. How about, you seemed excited about this barbecue question.
I like a barbecue question. I'll always do a barbecue question.
I feel like it's contentious to wade into barbecue topics, but.
Oh, well, I mean, it's a podcast. We don't want to be contentious for sure.
Brave and Bark. I just don't have a lot of strong. I like food. I can't think of a type of barbecue you could put in front of me that I would not be eager to eat, honestly.
Fair. I mean, but you also grew up in North Carolina eating that yellow sauce garbage.
Did I? I see. This is embarrassing to admit. Like, I don't have a good grasp on the regional barbecue, the competitive stuff in that area, like the mustard versus the vinegar. I know, like, sweet barbecue is Texas mostly, right?
So Texas does a lot of dry rubs usually that the people in our part of the country are less known for. You live in a liminal area between the mustard zone and the red smoky sauce
and the vinegar. Also, yeah. Like, I think that's probably why is that I encountered lots of different types of barbecue and I was never clear that there were like one style that was necessary.
Yeah. You grew up in the neutral zone. You're a child of both worlds.
Oh man, it was great. Let me tell you.
I'm going to say the first time I went to a barbecue place in North Carolina as a kid and I was like, yeah, I want barbecue. My dad was like, are you sure? It's like, yeah, I'll try barbecue. I love barbecue. This is great. And it came out and it was yellow. I was like, what the hell have you done, people? And then I had it. It was delish. Like, there was nothing wrong with a mustardy barbecue.
We are recording this podcast before breakfast and it was a mistake.
Oh, I had a bar. I always eat a bar before the podcast.
All these food questions are killing me. Braven Bark asks, for barbecue, do you guys prefer a dry rub or wet sauce? What kind and flavor do you prefer? What is your go-to cut of meat?
Okay, so first off, why choose? You do a dry rub, then you do the wet sauce afterwards.
Can you hang on? Doesn't the wet sauce nullify the dry rub? Like, the dry rub is no longer dry once you put wet sauce on it.
The dry rub gets sucked into the meat while it's cooking. That's the point of the dry rub.
I know it's for seasoning, but you know, if you only use one or the other, it does very much change like the kind of texture and experience. Right?
Oh, well, it also depends on what you're making. Like, if I'm doing ribs, I'm a dry rub on the ribs guy. And like, I'll give people, like, I'll serve a sauce on the side that people can do a dunker in if they want, but for the most, or spread on top, whatever. For the most part, I want a rib that's got a lot of flavor and a nice crust, right?
I think that's probably my answer. I was gonna say, like, I dry rub or wet sauce, I'll take either, like, flavor, I'll take anything. I'll certainly eat anything. I think ribs are probably like the kind of apex of barbecue to me, though.
So, okay. I've eaten a fair amount of barbecue in my travels, and I eat different stuff in different places. So the number one rule of eating barbecue for me is that you eat whatever the house specialty is, wherever you are. So like, if you're in, like, in Knoxville, there was this place called Sarge's for a long time. That was just like pulled pork, like a pork butter, pork shoulder. And he did it. He cooked that in a 55-gallon drum that they'd cut open and made a smoker out of, right? Like, it was, and he had all the other stuff that you get at barbecue places, but the thing you got was the pulled pork there. In Texas, I usually go for brisket because it turns out Texas is pretty good at brisket, and a lot of other places are bad at brisket. You get tough brisket.
That was my experience in Texas as well, for sure.
Yeah, the North Carolina, the pulled pork mustard stuff, the coastal North Carolina, the pulled pork mustard vinegar barbecue. Like, just to be clear, almost all barbecue has vinegar and mustard in it, right? It's just you put ketchup or something in there to make it red. And in North Carolina, they don't, because I guess there was some sort of great ketchup shortage at some point in the past. That stuff's pretty good. I'm okay with that. My favorite is a sweet red sauce, because it's what I grew up eating. There's this place called Ridgewood in between Bristol and Johnson City. And they do, I think they do pork butts, I can't remember, smoked in hickory with a little bit of a dry rub, but not a lot, mostly just smoke. And then they slice that thin and they cook the meat again in the sauce on a pan. And you put that on a big, big, huge hamburger bun with some coleslaw. Oh, it's so good.
I don't know how much more of this I can listen to. To be perfectly honest.
Hey, good news. I have a hamburger question for you then.
I was literally about to say, hey, we have, I have bolded a, okay. Gage006. I'm going to read both of these occasionally. Okay. So we have the Q&A question or the question and answer channel rigged up so that the intention is you type a question and it immediately disappears.
Goes into the void.
Like, it's like a Dropbox. Yeah. It's like you're dropping an anonymous question into a Dropbox and nobody can read it. Right.
Yeah.
But because of the peculiarities of Discord, like, if somebody else, I believe the case is that if somebody else is in that channel at the same time you type that question in, they will see it.
You'll see it until you close that channel and come back, and right. then you won't be able to see the message history anymore.
Yes. If you leave the channel and come back, they're gone. But occasionally somebody will just happen to be in there and see a question and respond to it.
they're good interactions when that happens. Usually
they are pretty funny, but yeah, because they're not like generally are not seen by many people. Also, if you were to tell me that Warbird lurks in that channel and waits for questions so he can troll.
I have no doubt that that is the case.
Yes, absolutely. Anyway, case in point, Gage 006. Why are they called hamburgers when they're generally not made with ham or even pork? What's a better name for the mighty burger?
Steamed ham.
Immediate response from Warbird. They're only hamburgers if they're from the Hamburg region of Germany. Otherwise, they're just sparkling patties.
Perfect. I can't answer that one better.
Yeah. That's all I got for that.
We've been doing smash burgers lately a lot.
Is it literally just what it sounds like? That was my assumption. You know, you just literally like, is it, why are you smashing it?
So you take a ball of salted meat, put it on a hot cast iron or griddle and smash it flat with the spatula or you can get a special thing for it, but just using a spatula works. And you only cook one side basically. So you smash it thin enough that you cook the bottom until it's crisp. And then the top, and when it's done, you slap a piece of cheese on there and usually you layer a couple of them. So there's a real nice textural thing that happens.
Is there an advantage there, or are you getting some different cooking effect somehow?
Well, so the bottom gets a strong Maillard reaction so it is like it is crunchy on the bottom when the griddle is the right temperature, which is the strength, right? It's not like, it gives you the same kind of textural differences you get from putting a burger on a really hot grill and searing the outside and having a medium rare inside, but without having to have a medium rare inside.
So it literally is just a textural thing.
Yeah, it's just another way to make burgers. And you don't need a grill to do it, which is nice.
God help us. Is that all the food questions?
I didn't see any more.
It has to be, right? Okay. Oh, God. Question from Simply Bagel, whose username is in itself a food reference.
Thanks, Bagel.
Adding a third challenger to your waffle and pancake debate, French toast.
Last weekend, I had French toast. I had waffles and pancakes. Pretty good weekend, I'm going to say.
Wait, what? Wow. What? Did you eat anything else the entire weekend?
I did a lot of brunching. It was Father's Day. It was our anniversary.
Fair.
You know.
Okay.
I'll eat a French toast. You got to have the right bread for French toast, though.
Yes. I think of the three, good French toast is like a mile ahead of the others. Like not even a comparison, but at the same time, I feel like you should only eat French toast about once a year.
Well, okay. So if you do French toast the right way, where it's not like completely sopped through with eggs, it's not that bad for you. But there's multiple kinds of French toast too. Like, do you get like a hard crusty bread, like a hearty, wheaty bread with some seeds and stuff in it and make a real heavy French toast? Or do you get like a yeast risen, like a brioche or a challah or something like that?
I mean, when I was a kid, we just used the cheapest like white sandwich bread that we had.
Yeah. And it was probably like on the cusp of falling apart when you put it in the pan because it was so soaked through, is how we made it when I was a kid. But I don't know. I like a French toast. I like French toast with some berries, a little syrup, maybe some powdered sugar.
Yeah. It's the texture for me. If you really get it right, you know, nice, crispy outside, chewy, kind of soft inside.
What are you getting for breakfast this morning, Brad?
Nothing. Coffee. It turns out
same thing you have every day. Can we do this cake batter question?
Is it the one that's bolded?
Yeah.
It's really gone from one end of the process to the other. It's not the one about the Gandalf impression, right?
No, it's not the one about the Gandalf impression.
I did think about using my morning froggy throat voice to try to, I can't. No.
No, you'll hurt yourself. You're not allowed to do that.
How do you feel about using electronics while on the toilet? Do you clean them with isopropyl alcohol at the same time as you wash your hands?
I do a clean hand, dirty hand plan.
Okay.
The one hand is for the business of the business. The other hand is for the electronics. And then the electronics go out of the splash zone before the bidet or toilet are used. So
we're not worrying about permeating the air with bacteria.
I'm fine. Look, that just makes the immune system stronger.
Yeah. Okay.
Do you clean your electronics?
Occasionally. I don't take them in the bathroom, though. I don't really take, it's kind of all business in and out for me.
Do you have paper books or anything? Material in there?
Nope. Wow. Ever since we got a bidet, I'm just kind of like, let's just do this. Also a function of just being incredibly busy these days.
Okay, so when paper books were a thing, I didn't take electronics into the bathroom at all.
Interesting.
But I like reading material.
Yeah, we used to have a lot of magazines in there, but I just... For whatever reason, I'm just hey,
yeah.
here, here to do something, and I'm just going to get it done and move on.
Yeah. Once our Entertainment Weekly subscription lapsed for the last time. Also, I don't think they publish Entertainment Weekly anymore. RIP.
Oh, they killed it.
Yeah. Let me ask you, this is another question. When you got your bidet, did you have to look up YouTube videos for how to use it properly?
I think that I just used the guide it came with, I remember.
Oh, ours didn't come with a guide.
No instructions at all?
I mean, it told me how to plug it in, but it didn't tell me how to use it.
Wait, plug it in as in like electrical? Is it a power?
No. Hook it up to the pipes.
Hook it up to the line, yeah.
Yeah, I knew how to hook it up to that line, though. That wasn't that hard. I didn't know like relative strength and like whether you're looking for a power washing or more of a gentle blast. You know, what you were getting out of that was the thing that I didn't know about at the time. So.
Was yours not adjustable?
Yeah, it is. But
ours can go from trickle to blast pretty easily.
Yeah, that was the problem. Is I was going blast, and I think I was damaging myself. So you want a gentle wash.
We should move on. The one we bought at least was so simple. I barely needed the instructions. It's literally just one line from the valve.
Yeah.
On the wall to the thing.
Yeah, that's what ours is too.
It's super, super simple.
Ours has the option to do hot water, but that was just because in order to get a left-hand model, we had to get a hot water one.
Yeah. I installed the same model for my parents when I was there though, and that was much more of an ordeal.
Are they fans? Are they enjoying? Do you hear about
it? It's in the downstairs toilet. I put it in like an out of the way one because I wasn't sure what they would think of it.
So it's a you gift, not a gift for them.
It was largely me improving my own living conditions.
We're going back to Palm Desert, and I'm thinking I might do the same thing. Just stealth install a bidet for them while we're there. Because why wouldn't you?
The one I got is like $30. Like, why not? Mm-hmm. Just buy a bidet, leave a bidet.
Yeah. Everywhere I go, I'm Johnny Bidet Seed.
But I ended up having to replace the whole flushing mechanism, and it was like a 30-year-old toilet.
Well, I mean, look, replacing the flapper can save up to 200 gallons of water a year. Many ads on the internet have told me.
I would believe that. This made me really interested in home ownership because I didn't realize that I could go to Home Depot, spend $15 and replace the entire innards of the toilet tank.
Oh, yeah.
It was like kind of eye opening. And I just did it. And it was like, wow, is this what it's like to have your own place? And you just do this?
Well, so I will tell you. The pro and the con is that on newer toilets, they often have some sort of proprietary mechanism that doesn't use the classic flapper. So we bought a toilet a few years ago after I might've talked about this on the podcast. There was a unfortunate incident with a partially filled travel size bottle of saline solution where it fell off of the shelf as the toilet was flushing and got sucked down around the gooseneck and was then floating at the top of the gooseneck in such a way that we just absolutely couldn't get it out.
Yikes.
And like, it was clear that I was going to have to take the toilet off of the base in order to repair that. And by the time, once I take the 25-year-old toilet off the base, we might as well shit can it and get a modern toilet. It's going to use a lot less water and flush better. So we did. But ours has an aqua piston is what it's called. And while it can flush a whole toilet's worth of golf balls, it is not compatible with the traditional flappers. So if we have to replace it, we have to get another aqua piston from the people that made the thing.
Aqua piston. Is that a brand name?
I believe it is. Yes.
Oh, that is absolutely a brand name. That looks fancy.
It's pretty fancy.
Oh yeah. That's wow. I've never seen anything like that. The thing I got was just a standard Fluid Master. I don't know what it's not the bulb type. It's not the type with the big.
Yeah. It has a thing on a slide probably, right?
Yes. It's a vertical slide contraption. I don't know what the technical term is for that.
That's the float is what that's called.
Okay. It's quite easy to install.
And that turns the water on and off. Yeah, toilets are surprisingly simple devices for something that was so much magic.
My dad. Oh my God. Like I also, it took forever to find the distance between the tank and the valve on the wall. I could not find a hose short enough to connect them properly.
Yeah.
So there were leaks. Ooh. There were like, because of
the bending
line, that line was bending too much. So it was kinked and there were leaks. And like, that's why I had to replace the flushing mechanism. Cause there was water seeping around the bottom of the tank. Like my dad was so ornery about this multi-day process. And like, he was just like, why didn't you just leave well enough alone? And then at the end of it, as soon as I got it all done and it was nice and tightly installed and no leaks and everything was working perfectly. It's like the best feeling ever, because then I got the fatherly approval.
Yeah, there you go.
You did a home improvement project well, and it's working right, and now I'm happy.
Mission accomplished.
Man, I just want to keep doing this all the time.
So I will tell you, when you buy a house, buy something with two bathrooms, because when you only have one bathroom and the toilet, like that kind of multi-day toilet project, it becomes a substantial cost if you have to, like, say, get a hotel room.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. When we had to replace the toilet, I had to do that in one day. And in the meantime, we were operating on, like, minimal flushing because of the float in the line.
Oh, no.
Yeah,
oh,
it was bad. It was bad.
Well, okay.
Always have two bathrooms.
Hey, well, at least I'm not hungry anymore.
I think that's as good a place as any to wrap it up, probably.
I think you're probably right.
If you have questions, you can post them into the semi-void that is the Question Seeking Answers channel in the Discord, or you can send them to techpod@content.town, where we will answer let's say, legally mandated one question per episode, maybe two. I don't know. That'll do it for us this week. As always, we need to thank our patrons. Thank you, patrons.
Thank you, patrons.
If you want to support the Tech Pod, which is a 100% listener supported show, you can go to patreon.com/techpod, where for as little as $2 a month, you can join the fabulous Tech Pod Discord. I say this every week. I feel like I should be better at it by now. The fabulous Tech Pod Discord, and talk about, basically anything imaginable. There's a whole world of topics out there. We had a request for some new channels the other day from Thread Club. I need to talk to you about that, because I have not yet. And I apologize to Scoot, because I said I was going to and then completely forgot until just this moment.
Oh, we have a lot of channels.
We have a lot of channels. There are channels for everything.
I frequently wonder if we have too many, but
I whack the top of that Discord every morning and say, man, you can fit so many channels in this baby.
It's true. It's true.
Thank you. A special thank you to our executive producer tier patrons, including Paddle Creek Games, makers of Fractured Veil, Andrew Slosky, Octothorpe Bunny Crimes. Oh, wait, hold on. Logic Ill.
Mm-hmm.
Just Wedge. Jacob Chappell, Joel Krauska, Twinkies in badge life mode. Did you see Twinkies badge? He posted it yesterday.
I need to reply to that.
It's fuzzy. Right. Well, he posted it in the channel too, so it's public. We can talk about it. His badge life badge for this year, he gave the sneak peek, is a fuzzy Totoro badge with the clock stuff on it that he does. It's very good.
I'm looking at it right now. It's like incredibly professional looking.
I want to find out. I'm thinking maybe I should make the Playdate covers fuzzy now as a result of this.
Oh, I just actually blew the image up to see where the numeric display is going to be. That's so good.
It's hidden under the fuzz. It's really, really smart. Oh,
man, I can't wait to see that in action.
Yeah, David Allen and James Kamek, thank you all so much. We appreciate you so much. And I guess we'll be back next week with another episode of the Tech Pod.
You guess?
I mean, look, future is impossible to judge at this point.
Anything could happen.
Right? The aliens could come.
Carl could become sentient and strangle us all.
I mean, I was really worried that Carl had blocked me. If I'm being honest, I was scary.
Has there been a disaster movie about, like, killer fog? There has to have been.
Yeah, the fog that turns people inside out. There's been multiples. Right. There's the mist. That's, there's the fog.
Oh, of course.
There's two. There's multiple versions of the mist.
Okay, there are numerous movies called The Fog.
Yeah, like, if you're afraid of fog, this is not where you want to live. That's all I'm saying. We'll see y'all next week. Bye, everybody.